So, but once those pads come on, Tevin Jenkins is a son of a bitch.
Kieran. Oh, that was good. The Bears offense is just like Tony's Wi-Fi, which is struggling.
I wake up, flex, I'm down that check, no drip, this wet.
Welcome back to the Irish Bears Show. It's Friday evening over here in this part of the world. Oh, what are you drinking, my good man?
Nothing but the best, man. Nothing but the best.
That's lovely. What color was lovely that? Guinness. Lovely. Now, I will say to you, get you to Cork one day and have a Murphy's. And you can have a Murphy's versus Guinness versus Beamish conversation. That's the real
I love a Murphy's, by the way. Honest to God, my dad and I went to Kerry a few years ago. And the entire week we were there, we didn't touch a pint of Guinness once. We only drank Murphy's the whole time we were there for some reason. But lovely beer, man. Totally underrated.
Yeah, it is one of those ones that no one ever talks about, because rightly, because Guinness basically underneath it. I want to ask Lord Crimson a real quick question. Why do you miss beer, man? Just, is there something that happened to you that you don't want to talk about? Oh, it's a January dry. Is it dry January? Maybe that's what we're doing. Anyway, welcome back to the Irish Bears Show. We've got some cool stuff going on with the Bears. It's a good conversation. The Packers are out of the playoffs. We've got championship games coming up that we want to talk about at the end of the whole thing. So, do you know what? We'll get started. Noel, look, if Noel comes across as a bit sad today, lads, don't worry. He's a Liverpool fan. He's had a bad day with their head coaches.
You know, genuinely sad.
Let's just stick to the positive NFL stuff for the Bears, and let's not go there.
Other than that, Noel, how are you doing?
Good. Yeah, as you say, look, it's been interesting with the Bears. So at least there's a few things to talk about. I don't know how they're actually going to work out in reality when the season kicks off next year, but still, there's definitely some changes that make things interesting.
Well, let's get straight to it then. Tony, we have an offensive coordinator. It looks like we've got the first guy that was interviewed. The process looked pretty good, as we said last week with Adam. It was pretty interesting what he said about how it was working out. And we seem to have got the number one guy, or the first guy we interviewed. When you saw it first, before you kind of did a deep dive into who he is and what he thinks about, what was your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those ones where out of the guys that we had available in interviews, and there was, what, 8 or 9 interviews, maybe something like that. For me, that was the one that I would have chosen personally, based on a number of things, including you know, what he was able to do in his time in Seattle, the sheer experience that he's got as a play caller in the NFL, which, you know, for me personally, I know a couple of you guys as well set out that was one of the main kind of prerequisites for bringing in a new OC, was making sure he'd actually called plays before, rather than getting herself into a Getsy situation again. So that was always a big thing. So for me, you know, that combination of experience and, you know, relative success was hugely important. You know, and I think it's probably wise to say that, yeah, we know that, you know, there were some issues with Waldron's offense. You know, maybe this year it's not been as good as it was the previous year and things like that. But we have to remember how bad our offense have been. So it's a step up, regardless. It's the betterment of the offense. And we'll get on to it as well. There's different factors involved in how successful an offensive coordinator is going to be. And one of the main ones of them is the QB. You know, and we've seen a bit of a renaissance with Geno Smith. You know, we might see him do something with Justin Fields if Justin Fields sticks around, or, you know, if we end up with Caleb Williams or someone else, then he's going to be the guy who's got an opportunity to mold the rookie in a kind of future long-term starter. So great opportunity for him. And I think we probably picked the best of the lot there.
Yeah, I think, Noel, on that, right, and again, I said this kind of in jest in our chat, but it's a stat. So you know how I detest stats, but it is a stat. Like, the total offense last year for the Seattle Seahawks, total offense was 21st in the league. And the Chicago Bears was 20th, right? So officially, Luke Etsy, who unbelievably has interviews for an offensive coordinator, unbelievably, statistically, just on that one stat alone, is better than what Shane Waldron is bringing. Why would you be so excited that Shane Waldron, for you, is your offensive coordinator of Chicago Bears?
Because he's not Luke Etsy. No, I'm joking. That's not it, of course.
I was dead serious with that one. I
short
that
and sweet, man.
I like that. We're at the next section.
No, I think just in watching, because similar to Tony, when the names are coming out, Waldron was the one that kind of stood out to me, as I think is probably the best of the group that kind of realistically looked like they were in the running for the job. When you obviously start watching Seattle then, yeah, I think that there is more of a balance now. I know there were some questions last year, maybe he threw it a little bit too much, but I think you look at what he's done overall of the last few years, there did seem to be more of a balance in the kind of game he was calling. There doesn't seem to be those glare. No, there are certain plays with Getsy that just stand out as, what the hell are you doing? Now, for me, obviously, I haven't been watching the Seahawks as intensely week in, week out, but in kind of looking into Shane Waldron, they didn't seem to stand out as much as, say, a Luke Getsy's. You know, he seemed more competent in terms of his play calling. Look, again, I've been on to Seattle Seahawks fans who I've known, you know, since the kind of his name came up, and they kind of talk about him a little bit like we talk about Getsy. So from that point of view, you have to pump the brakes a bit and say, look, you have to trust that obviously the Bears have gone in and have seen something they like. They've talked to him. Hopefully they know, they've talked to him about whichever kind of quarterback he'll work with. But in general, you look at what he's done with Geno Smith. You know, he helped bring him back up again. So, yeah, look, a lot of it's on faith, Ant. But looking at what he's done, he does, to me, strike as more competent in terms of play calling. As Tony said, he has that experience. You know, he's been around the NFL for a long time. He's had spells in New England when New England were good. He was with, you know, McVay and at the Rams. So there's some good quarterbacks that he's worked with and some good coaches that he's worked with, which you hope will stand him in good stead. Then he has called plays for 3 years. As you say, you know, it depends what Seahawks fans you talk to, whether or not he's good at that or not. I still think he is an upgrade on Luke Getsy. So while I don't think we've gone out and got the top offensive coordinator out there, I do think in terms of the market, that's all you can pick from, you know, what was out there. I think he probably is maybe a middle of the pack kind of offensive coordinator to now. And hopefully then going forward, depending on the quarterback, you know, maybe he can continue to develop. Yeah, so it's, look, a lot of it's on faith, Ant, you know, that kind of way. But I do genuinely think he looks like an upgrade over what we have. And hopefully then he's just going to kind of continue from there.
See, my worries on this is twofold, personally, right? I'm not going to go down the road again of blind faith. I'm just not. I've been burned too much by the Chicago Bears. I've had too many scenarios where I'm having to defend people or defend quarterbacks or defend whoever I need to defend because of what I would have seen blind faith. I'll give you these stats, Tony, and I'll get your opinion on what this is. The third down conversions by the Seattle Seahawks in 2022, they were 22nd. Last year, they were 20th. In red zones conversion, they were 26th in 2022 and 27th in 2023. So there is red flags with this guy. And there's also red flags for me in the fact of that Matt Eberflus, Ryan Poles, their last coordinator picks, both an offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator, were flops. Absolute total flops. And again, it's really unfair to ask you this question without this guy having stepped foot in Chicago, but is there a reason to be a little bit concerned based on what I've just said?
Yeah, I mean, end of the day, I mean, as Noah was saying, we haven't hired the perfect offensive coordinator. There are issues there, in particular what a lot of Hawks fans and even the stats will tell you as well, as you pointed out there, that third down conversion success and red zone success weren't as good as they probably could have been. However, early downs were very successful. Yeah. So you have to sort of balance that, and we all know, and we've talked about it before, that, you know, statistics can tell you so much depending on what statistics that you're using, you know. And you mentioned earlier on with the Bears and the Seahawks being relatively close in terms of points per game and offensive yards per game and all that kind of stuff. However, at the same time, there were actually instances where the Bears, sorry, the Seahawks were actually outperforming the Bears in particular with passing yards per game. They were a lot higher up there. You know, the Bears got a lot of their yards from running the ball, in particular Justin Fields running the ball. You know, obviously I don't feel personally that's sustainable over the long term. But if you go back to 2022 with the Seahawks, they were ninth in the league in points, 13th in yards. So, you know, you have good years and bad years, I suppose. One of the main things I would say in regards to that is who your QB is hugely important as well. Now, Geno Smith was, you know, he was an aging quarterback, you know, when he came to Seattle. No one was expecting him to kind of flourish at all. Now, if we've looked at a guy like Waldron and he's managed to get Geno Smith to flourish into the type of quarterback that he has been over the last couple of seasons, imagine if he's got the opportunity to mold a quarterback who's at a higher level than Geno Smith was. You know, you could then end up with a guy who has more success in the red zone, who has better success in third down conversions, because they are very different situations versus, you know, early downs for various different reasons. So I think that's a huge part of it. But to go back to the passing yards per game thing, even this year, the Seattle Seahawks sort of middle of the pack, 15th in the league, but the Bears were 27th. Okay. So that's a huge thing there. And if you're able to get, if you're able to bring the Bears passing yards up per game, you're looking at this more successful offense. We've got a lot of good tools there for whichever QB is going to be, DJ Moore, Cole Kmet. You know, you could see, I mean, I doubt Darnell Mooney will come back, but, you know, you'll see a number two come in there and hopefully make an impact. And a lot of that's to do with Fields and his ability to read the field. We're not going to get too much into that just now. But there are obviously genuine concerns, and I absolutely appreciate them, and I think we have to take that into consideration. However, if you're looking at the full picture, you're looking at the kind of QB quality in terms of Geno Smith, he's good, but, you know, the ceiling wasn't as high as it is with Justin Fields or Caleb Williams. You know, there is higher ceilings there with both of those guys, so you're hoping for a better result.
Yeah, I also, and again, I'll say this just out of playing both sides, I think it's fair that when people look at the Geno Smith conversation for Walden, you need to look a little bit 1 year before that and look at Russell Wilson in the first 10 games he was there. And Russell Wilson was on fire in those first 10 games before he broke his thumb or his finger or something like that. And that was under Walden as a defensive coordinator. So Tony's point, you're very, very valid. I think that the quarterback who's in place, in my opinion, is probably a better player than Geno Smith. So you're hoping that Shane Waldron will be able to take that player and move him on. And he also has such experience around the league. And Noel, you've spoken about this quite a lot, about when we were talking, I think it was last week and the week before, about how important the offensive coordinator is for you. And Tony mentioned it earlier, how important it is to get a person in with that experience in those 3 years and get that in. From that perspective, is that the most important quality you were looking for in that offensive coordinator? He had gone out there, he'd seen good times. And look, everyone's read it about the Dallas Cowboys game last year where he blitzed something, or Parsons came running off the edge and he didn't see him at all. And it was a game-changing move that he learned from that and goes forward for the Bears. Is that something that you really, really kind of sold you almost on this guy, that he's got that level of experience, he's been in the good times and bad, and hopefully when it comes to Chicago, he'll bring it forward?
Yeah, I think experience was massive for us, especially because, look, initially with Justin Fields is still young, he's still learning. I feel like he hasn't got the kind of coaching he should have, so he still has things to develop. So if he's the quarterback, I think it's important to have someone who has that experience with a quarterback like Geno Smith, who is a similar, you know, dual threat kind of quarterback to a Justin Fields. Or if, for example, it's Caleb Williams, well, again, it's even more important that your OC has some sort of experience working with quarterbacks and calling plays. Because we have a defensive head coach, you know, you kind of wanted an OC to come in who could essentially be that offensive head coach. So if you were getting another first-time play caller, I mean, we had Getsy learning on the job. Who knows, maybe 2 or 3 years, you know, this Bears experience could be a benefit to him and it could help build him. And maybe in 2 or 3 years, he could be a really good head coach. or not the head coach, sorry, offensive coordinator, but it wasn't right for the Bears with a young quarterback that needed to develop. And I still think, even though Justin Fields is going into year four, he still is a quarterback that needs help to mold and develop. Or if it's Caleb Williams, obviously then you absolutely need an OC who has that experience working with quarterbacks and bring them along and call them plays. So yeah, for me it was massively important. I mean, I couldn't see them getting an OC with no experience, but you know, by all accounts they were looking at some who were high up on their list. What was the lad's name from the Rams?
Cunningham? No, was it Cunningham? No. Is that Cunningham?
Robinson.
Robinson.
I've read reports saying he was the number two option, and he has zero experience. And look, for me, that doesn't work. That would only work for me if you have an offensive-minded head coach like a Harbaugh who's going to work with that quarterback. And then, you know, your offensive coordinator isn't as important because the head coach is running everything. So, yeah, experience for me is huge. Just because of the quarterback situation the Bears find themselves in with either quarterback, assuming it's Caleb Williams if they draft one and not Drake May or someone else.
What I'll say as well, just to interrupt you very quickly. In terms of Waldron coming to the Bears, though, what I think we have to remember as well is that Waldron had options.
Yeah.
You know, there were other teams that were interested in him. And he's decided to come at the Bears. Now, there's no doubt money will play an aspect in that, absolutely. But the Bears are notoriously cheap, so I don't imagine there'll be a huge difference there. So he's wanted to come at the Bears. Why is he wanted to come at the Bears? You know, those conversations that he had with Matt Eberflus and Ryan Poles, what was discussed there? You know, is he relishing the chance to work under with Justin Fields and develop him into something better than he is? Is he relishing the opportunity to come here and coach Caleb Williams and, you know, potentially really make a name for himself as a shit hot offensive coordinator with you know, a guy with a lot more talent than anybody else he's worked with? Or is it to do with the coaching setup there? I mean, is he really impressed by what Matt Eberflus is saying and, you know, the other guy, you know, what the plan is for the team moving forward over the next few years? And that, I think that's quite a big thing. I want to ask you guys in terms of that, how kind of important it was that he chose the Bears over other teams and what that says.
I think for me personally, and I'll let Noel come in after that, for me personally, you're looking at the Bears and you're seeing two picks in the first 10, the number one pick, which everyone is saying to you that it's going to be a number one draft pick quarterback. If it's not, then you're going to have a shed load in your brain, opportunities to go and use that. You've got quite a lot of money in free agency, so you can redevelop this team. You've seen that you've got your wide receiver one in DJ Moore, and therefore you've got that. You've got tight end who's starting to perform and is in a long-term contract. And in your brain, you're seeing this offense that was not well utilized, whether that's the offensive coordinator's fault, whether that's the quarterback's fault, whether that's the offensive line, whatever. And you've got all those things adding together. Plus, you've got a head coach who, while is a defensive head coach, won't get involved or doesn't seem to get involved in anything to do with the offensive side of the football. So, and the proof of that is Luke Getsy was still in charge in week 17, 18, and there was not even a sniff of him getting fired, even though they fired him the next day. So he looks like he's getting open season on it. Looks like he's able to go and get his own coaching ticket in. So all those things adding together, I think it's a really interesting job for me. And that's why the Waldron pick is so, so important. I've been saying this the whole time. It's, for me, it's up there with the quarterback decision. Maybe not as important, the quarterback decision at the end of the day, quarterback is the one that makes the plays, but it's right up there because we do not want to have, and it's the reason why I'm questioning this guy, we do not want to have a scenario that Justin Fields walked into. We just don't. We don't want a scenario that Mitch Trubisky walked into. Now, whether you think either of those quarterbacks are good enough, that's up to you. That's your decision, your question, that's fine. But you still can't get away from the fact that they were both thrown into weirdly, differently bad situations. And that we need to make sure that we have an offensive coordinator that's not going to do that too. Whether that's Justin Fields in year four, or whether that's Drake May, whether that's Caleb Williams, whether that's Jaden Daniels, whoever it is picked at quarterback as a draft pick, it looks like it's going to be Caleb Williams. That's the one for me that is the reason why I think he's here. Because he's also thinking that in 12 months' time, if he does what CJ Stroud does, he's looking at a head coaching job.
Yeah. No, yeah, absolutely.
No, for whatever, yeah, for everything Anne said there as well. I mean, look, for all the doom and gloom we've had over the Bears for a while, the fact of the matter is, like, with the right decisions, the future is positive. As Anne said, maybe he comes in here and he looks at Justin Fields and thinks, you know what, they haven't unlocked him, I can unlock him. And with keeping Justin Fields, maybe the Bears are looking to trade down and get a Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers or something like that. So he could be looking at an exciting quarterback in Fields who he likes and another top-class wide receiver to go to DJ Moore, because we know he's had a couple of really good receivers in Seattle. So that's one option he could be looking at and thinking, yes, plus there's a potential, you know, tackle at number 9 or, you know, whatever else they may want to do. As Ann said, they have money available. So, you know, there's money there. They're probably going to be active in free agency. So that could appeal to him. Or if he goes the other way, he may think, you know what, I do think Caleb Williams is generational. And as the OC, you know, we can take this kid. They're telling me we're going to take this kid at number 1, and I can really, really help mold this, you know, what he might think is a future Hall of Fame or whatever he may think about the player. There's just so many options with this Bears team. And then Ant was spot on there. He could potentially be the head coach of the offense, and he could be left to do what he needs to do. And this time next year, if all goes well and things work out as well as they can, you know, maybe he is in that head coach kind of circle that's going around, because he has players then there. You know, we have a good running back room. He has, you know, Cole Kmet there has shown last year that he is really developing as a tight end. So, yeah, I think for an offensive coordinator, and I've said this for weeks when people were saying, oh, why would they join with Flus there? They would join because there are exciting players there. There are options for the Bears. And if they get it right, even if the team as a whole maybe underachieves, if that offensive coordinator can get it right with some of these exciting players, they can still boost their own reputation, you know, along the way. So it's I think for an offensive coordinator, I think it's a really, really good spot to get yourself into.
I also think it's going to be interesting. You said something there, Noel, that kind of got me thinking around the interview process, right? So they interviewed 9 people. So 8 of them, let's say 4 of them go on and become offensive coordinators, or what Tony had a great line last week, a random other name of a position that we don't have a clue what that means, right? In another team. So there's no way Poles or Flus have told these hires who they're going to get. They're not going to say, right, lads, just to let you know, don't say it to anybody now. We're going with Fields, or we're going with Williams, or we're going with May. But you know what? Shh, don't tell anyone it's going to be Jaden Daniels. Like, there's no way on earth they've had that conversation to them. So that's why Waldron is a really interesting one, because he doesn't tip the cap directly to one or the other. And it very much sees it as that way inclined. Moving on from that, today we had Kerry Joseph, right? I'll be honest, never heard of the lad. Never heard of him before in my life. I'll be completely honest. He's been brought in as the QB coach. And it says that he was a QB in Canada. He was a safety in the NFL. So he's played the position. He's been in Seattle for the length of time. So he's been brought by Waldron. What's your take on that, Tony?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of similar to you in the sense that I don't really know. I mean, the guy has been an assistant QB's coach, not a QB coach, but an assistant QB's coach up until this point. You know, not a lot of NFL coaching experience there. And I think this is one of the ones where we sort of have to just put our faith in Waldron and say, well, if he thinks it's a good idea, then, well, and it all goes back to, if Matt Eberflus thinks it's a good idea to hire Shane Waldron, then it's a good idea for Shane Waldron to take on Kerry Joseph. And if Ryan Poles thinks it's a good idea to retain Matt Eberflus, then all has a domino effect, sort of thing, you know. So, you know, it's just one of the ones we need to wait and see. I mean, what I will say is he has a tremendous opportunity as his first full QB coach job to either take on Justin Fields or Caleb Williams. I'm not mentioning any other names because it's not going to be anybody else. I'm sorry, guys. You can bookmark this one.
We've got a defensive head coach who keeps on talking about the 200 club. Caleb Williams is a sensational cornerback. I hope it's Ryan Poles that's making. Poles making the call.
Ryan Poles was involved with taking Patrick Mahomes. He knows what to do. But I think it's going to be one of the ones that sort of, like, as things progress, we'll sort of get an idea. I think obviously anything's going to be done with the oversight of Waldron anyway, so that's always something you need to think about. But what I thought was really cool though is that he's going to be an assistant coach at the Senior Bowl. I don't know if he, I think he might be calling plays as well. So that's a really good opportunity for him, but it's also a really good opportunity for the Bears. And we've been in this situation a couple of times in the last few years where we've got to coach at the Senior Bowl for various different positions. And, you know, we got...
It's probably how he ended up at Bayesian, actually, because Gessie was there working with him last year.
Exactly.
And wasn't Darnell Wright in the bowl?
I think
as
he was as well.
He played as well, yeah. So you've got them. You've actually got Jim Dre in the offensive line and Justin Hines, defensive line. They're also coaching at the Senior Bowl. And you've got Dave Borgonzi, who's going to be at the Shrine Bowl as well, coaching. So you've got a lot of intel there, not in terms of how players play, but in terms of how players act, how they train, how they react to the coaching and instruction and all that kind of thing. So I think that's a huge aspect of it, you know, anyway, to have another body in there.
Can I ask you something on that as well? Because it's been annoying me a little bit, right? I've said this on the show a couple of weeks ago, and I'll ask Noel or Tony, either of you come in on. I don't like the idea that you look at a guy in the locker room as being a nice guy, and that's an important part of the process. So whether the guy's a nice guy or not is high up on their list and culture within the room. Like, everyone knows Karen Rogers was not a nice guy. It just isn't a nice guy, right? There's a lot of other people within the NFL who are not nice guys who go out and win.
I don't think it's nice guy, Ant. I don't think that's what they look for. I think it's more about how they carry themselves as a professional and how they interact with their teammates. And are they someone who is divisive with other players, or are they someone who can kind of, you know, get along with players? I don't think you have to be a nice guy. I think you just have to carry yourself the right way for a locker room to be able to accept you. I think you can probably tell certain players who are dickheads, you know, that kind of way.
But isn't that what I
say that now, I mean the kind that would upset a locker room. Like, you can still be a bit of a, you know,
but just win.
Not a nice guy, but still have that kind of professionalism that you want to succeed or whatever. I guess you probably just have to see the locker room to see these guys, just to see how they carry themselves. And are they the kind of guy that could cause issues that would actually upset a locker room, or, you know, maybe have a bit of bite about them, but still look like that they're not going to actually cause issues? I don't know. Nice guy is what you really look for in that game.
Just win. For me, just win. So I'll give you an example. This is just me. For example, right, everyone knows I like Justin Fields. I want Justin Fields to stay. Justin Fields is a really nice guy, supposedly. Really, really nice guy. If Caleb Williams has found out that he's an absolute dickhead, right, let's say that's what the synopsis is of everybody, but everyone agrees that Caleb Williams is better for the Chicago Bears going forward, to take Caleb Williams at the number one pick, it shouldn't even be a question mark. It shouldn't even be part of the conversation. If Caleb Williams is the best player for the Bears to take them on to the next level, if that's the agreement based on just play and what he can do around the field, what he can do in getting the Bears into positions. And the reason I say that is Green Bay up the north didn't care what characters they took at quarterback. Didn't care less what they took. They just wanted to win. So for me, that's the reason why I'm laughing and joking a bit about it, because I just find it a bit like, sure. Isn't, like, it goes back to my whole anger. I'm sorry for ranting on this. My whole anger about the Monday after the loss to the Packers. Because they were all in there having a laugh and a joke. And it was like, bye, buddy. Bye, mate. Love you. It's like, you've just lost for the 10th time in a row to your local rivals. Right? Might mean nothing to you, but it means something to the team. But, it's okay. The character of the guys was good. Sorry, I ranted. Tony, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think it really depends on what you mean by the guy's a dick. You know, like... I personally don't really care whether or not they all hug and love each other, whatever, that means nothing. But I think you have to have the right mental attitude. You have to be, you have to set examples, and you have to lead by example. And I think they're all hugely important. I don't necessarily think being a disruptive influence in the locker room or being an arsehole is a good thing. I don't necessarily mean, but at the same time, like, you don't have to be the friendliest guy in the world, you know, like there's a middle ground there where you're fine as well. And I think there's a bit of a balance that you have to take there. You talk about Karen Rogers now. I think obviously with him, you know, obviously coming at first, I don't know if he was a dick right away, You know, or whether, you know, whether
it's developed over the years.
Well, this is it. Like, it's built up over the years because he's built a reputation. He's got a bit of a swagger about himself, and you know, and fair play to him because he could walk into any stadium in the NFL and win because he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. You know, and whether or not that makes him a dick, I don't know. But certainly, he's got to have a bit of a presence about him. And if you take that the wrong way, that's up to yourself. But end of the day, everyone's there to do a job. They're all there to win. I absolutely agree with you, Anthony. I don't like this fucking, you know, laughing and joking after, you know, a losing season. You know, you have to seriously sit there and reflect. I was at a basketball game in Scotland a few weeks ago, and we lost the game. And at the end of it, they played over the tannoy, "Que sera, sera, whatever will be, will be." And I was like, get that off. That is utter nonsense. Whatever will be, will be. What kind of attitude is that?
Start
singing and dancing. Get that shit off. Get back in your locker room and think about what you could do better for the next one. But look, I don't understand that mentality at all. It's passive, you know, and passive mentality in football especially doesn't get you anywhere.
I totally agree with it. In Ireland, we have Roy Keane, and Tony, you know about Roy Keane. Roy Keane was not liked by his teammates. Not at all. Whether it was at Manchester United, whether it was at Ireland, was not a popular figure. Wasn't hated, but wasn't a popular figure. He was their captain and leader. And he dragged those teams to tournaments and wins. And they all loved him because he dragged them to wins. And for me, I don't necessarily want my... Once Chicago, okay, I'll rephrase that. I'm sick and tired of hearing, "Oh, but the lads get on really well, and they go for coffees together, and Jesus, they go down training camps down in Miami together, and they go on this training camp, and they go on that training camp, and they know each other's kids' names." Don't care. Just win the game. Just win the football game. And it's getting to the stage now where my fear from, and this is the reason why I'm so angry about the Matt Eberflus keep, is because he's all about that, about the lads are all together as one and we're all happy and jovial and all this kind of crap. I don't particularly want that. I want something different. Anyway, moving on from that little rant that I've just gone on for 4.5 minutes. If anyone's over on Twitter and is watching on, come over to YouTube and tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. Give me all the stuff that you want to give right now.
Moving on.
Get involved. Moving on to the scariest news of the day, week, year. We nearly are. Well, we are. We're interviewing a former Green Bay coordinator because, do you know what? We haven't learned. We're interviewing a former Green Bay coordinator, Mr. Barry, to see if he wants to become our defensive coordinator. Other than the fact that he is being fired by Green Bay, did I miss something? Is this just to get a kind of insight into what the Packers think when it comes to our offense, maybe? Tony?
Listen, I don't think the interview that they're with Joe Barry here is necessarily going to be for the defensive coordinator position. It might be a position on the staff. I think he was a linebackers coach before. I could be wrong.
Okay.
But you know, it's one of many. I mean, I know they've interviewed Chris Harris and Terrell Williams and guys like that as well. But, I mean, what I would say defensively, you know, again, I don't want to get in the whole Chicago Bears mindset of praising mediocrity, because the defense were very good the second half of the season. There's definitely a lot of space for improvement. There's no doubt about that. But that side of the ball was very good. And I think a lot of that was down to the sort of changes that were made a few weeks into the season with Matt Eberflus taking over play calling. I know Eberflus wanted to be the head coach and oversee things and not necessarily have his head in a restaurant menu. But at the same time, I think that he did a very good job with the play calling. I think he would be, if he weren't the Bears head coach anymore, he'd be one of the top prospects for the defensive coordinator position in the league.
But not a head coach.
Not a head coach, but no doubt about he would get a top DC position because he can play call, and he's a good defensive coordinator. There's no doubt about that. So I think whoever's coming in is going to be assisting him. I don't know if he's going to hand off play calling again. I think he should just keep a hold of it. Why fix something that isn't necessarily broken? So guys like this coming in to be the defensive coordinator, you know, it's going to be a lot of sort of working together with Eberflus there. But Barry, there's no confirmation anywhere that he's coming in for a DC position. He's coming in for other reasons. And what might actually be interesting as well is, you know, you bring him in and you might get some sort of intel on the Green Bay Packers.
Totally. Which is possibly, you know, some reason why to do it. Yeah, because we know from even on offense, a lot of these interviews, you kind of feel like they're not really going to hire this guy, but you just feel like it's a fact-finding mission. But I find this now, this whole defensive coordinator search fascinating now, because what Tony said, you know, Eberflus did really, really well when he took over play calling. So is that something that's going to happen going forward? Because if it is, then you look at some of the experienced heads being linked with the job and you wonder, well, are they going to want that job if Eberflus is calling plays? So then you look at, maybe they bring in someone a little less experienced, like say a Chris Harris, who hasn't called plays yet, and could he develop under an Eberflus? Or does Chris Harris want to call plays now? Does he want to take that next step? Could you be bringing someone from inside like Berganzi or Hoke or someone like that? And so it's actually fascinating now what way this kind of defense coordinator job is going to shake out, because I'm like you guys, why change it? Like, it was going really, really well on defense. Like, why would you change him calling the players unless, as mentioned, he wants to go back to that CEO type of a defensive coordinator to oversee everything? So I think it'll be interesting to see the kind of names, you know, or who gets the job, because obviously then that'll possibly indicate, you know, will Eberflus be keeping it? Because if you're a Leslie Frazier, for example, I don't know if he's being interviewed or if he'd come in, but for example, do you want to take a job if Matt Eberflus is calling plays? You're the defensive coordinator, but he's still calling plays. Like, why would he? Like, so that's going to be fascinating how that shakes out.
Yeah, I think that's right. I really see Harris as being the leader in the locker room at the moment, just purely because of what you just said. Now, I think you want to have somebody in there that you can almost mold into that play.
That's the one I'm hoping to go, to be honest.
For years.
You know, we'll see how it goes.
Because it opens up then, if Matt Eberflus at the end of the year says, you know what, pretty much like watching a rookie quarterback underneath an experienced quarterback, he's like, okay, we've had a year of you watching this. Let's see how you're going on calling plays in a couple of games to start the season, or maybe at the end in week 16, 17. It depends on where the Bears are, obviously. But that's the conversation to be had. Just on the defense, I know everyone's starting to look towards free agency. I'm not going to do that. But what positions, lads, do you think on the defensive side of the football? Because everyone's talking about the offense and what we need, the quarterback conversation, which has got a little bit boring. What position on the defense stands out before anything else? And you don't need to give me names as to who you want to replace, but more, who do you think that has been that kind of weak link? Okay, and I'll remove it straight away because the easy answer is Eddie Jackson. So we're going to take Eddie Jackson's safety out of here because that's the easy answer. You both were going to throw at me. So if you remove Jackson from it, what's the next position that you feel that needs to get fit into an Eberflus-style defense?
There's two really that stand out to me. Pass rusher is probably the most popular thing to say, because we need some opposite Montez Sweat, who's going to be consistent. And I don't think anybody else in that team in terms of pass rushers were overly consistent. And the other thing that stands out to me, and it's what we've talked about since the first day that Eberflus came in, was that three technique. Now, I know our defensive line have been very good. I think in terms of defensive rushing, we are number one in the league. Excellent, no doubt about that. However, the interior of that line also need to be able to get past the offensive lineman and get to the quarterback. And I don't think we have that big, powerful, athletic three technique on the team currently. And I think that's something that sort of evaded us for a while. And that's key to the Eberflus defense. And you consider it's been successful so far without having that person necessarily. But if you get that person in, then all of a sudden that defense becomes a lot better. So three technique is probably, for me, something I would still continue to look at. I don't know who's available in free agency for three technique. And I don't know if there's anybody at the top of the draft there, but I haven't really deep dived the draft yet, to be honest with you. But certainly three technique is something I'd be looking at.
No.
Yeah, for me, similar to Tony, because when you look behind that defensive line, you know, things seem to come to better to come together. Obviously, you take away Eddie Jackson from that, that's a question mark. You know, cornerbacks look good. Now, will a contract be given out there to kind of make sure those three are kept there? We'll kind of see. But other than that, then the linebackers look in a good spot. So, I mean, then you come back to the defensive line. As Tony said, you know, it was better in terms of the run, obviously, number one. But there are still question marks there. Obviously, the two rookies in terms of Pickens and Dexter are coming along. Are they coming along the way the Bears hope? Don't know. Will Justin Jones be back? We know Billings got a new contract, so he's going to be back. But will Jones be back is a question. I think he did okay, but maybe they might look at, you know, is okay enough. Maybe they might bring somebody else in. But the first thing that kind of jumped out to me was the pass rush. Look, Ngakoue is not going to be there. So, you know, you're looking for someone across from Montez Sweat to help get that pressure in there, because as great as Sweat was, you can't leave it on him all season. So it's going to be interesting to see, like, what they do on that other side of him and who they can get. Will it be free agency, or, you know, do they have someone in the draft lined up? But like Tony, it's definitely along that defensive line. There are a couple of moves that still could be made that you would hope would help kind of bring that Bears defense up to the next level.
Yeah, I agree with you. So I think they actually might double down. I think they might take an edge in free agency. I think they might take an edge in the draft, because they're going to lose Dominic Robinson. I agree with you. I don't think Ngakoue is coming back. And I think there's somebody else. Who else was there? Was there edge or side of Sweat that I'm missing? Was that maybe it was just those two? So they're going to need Green, Rayshon Green. Everyone talks about him, Betsy, being a special teamer, but I don't.
And Walker as well, wasn't it?
Oh, DeMarcus Walker will stick around. Sorry, Walker, yes. Yeah. So they will go out and get, I think, two more. One maybe as a project, and one then as your personnel free agency, a bit of a big time splash to try and get that. Because we all saw, as you lads have said, once there was pressure on that made by that defensive line, our linebackers came into play. Suddenly we're getting picks from our cornerbacks, and suddenly we looked a different side. And that was the massive part of that Montez Sweat trade. And now, I 100% agree with you, that's probably the best Montez Sweat can play. And that's maybe he's going to go better again and prove me wrong, but that's at him at his almost maximum. So to ask him to do that again a year after, we've seen that with pass rushers, it's not as easy. They're not going to just let him go at people anymore. So you need to have that double threat on the other side to really get it. And Tony, you're right, through the middle as well. Create those pressure points to allow whoever our quarterback is to get positions, to get our offensive side of the football in good spots to win football games. And that's what we really want to do. And that's a massive part of it is. It's going to be really...
Just on that before you move on, I don't know if you guys have read this, but I'm seeing Chase Young being linked a lot now with the Bears being favourites to get him in a free agency. That's a hell of a turnaround, considering people had a meltdown when the Bears didn't trade for him and they went for Sweat. So, I mean, I don't know if that's realistic or not, but, you know...
It depends on whether they see the medicals. So supposedly...
And what he wants as well, because look, it looked like he got himself a good trade, but it just didn't really pan out for him. So
he can't ask for too much.
That's the thing. You got to look at the medicals first and foremost, and then you have to see what kind of money he's actually looking for. But who knows? Maybe him and Sweat back together again could be something.
There's Joe Barry's nephew in the chat.
Killian, come on.
Killian, come on. Get him tell he's not coming. He's not coming over to Chicago. He see where he is.
Go back, Killian. Keep joining, my man. Anyone want to make comments, put in comments, even if you're Joe Barry's nephew. Moving on to one last kind of topic I wanted to talk about, and it's not going to be quarterback, because I said to myself I wasn't going to go down this road. But if we talk about the offensive side defensive side of the football, like the question I just asked, if we take away quarterback from the conversation and we take away the obvious wide receiver two and center conversation from it, in the offensive side of the football, if we're looking at the number nine position and we're staying there, and we've taken a quarterback at one, or we've kept Justin Fields at one, whatever, but we're at nine and we're going to say the Poles comes to you and says, we're going to go for the offensive side of the football, what next position do you want to be getting? If we imagine that all the great players in those positions are still there, what's the position you want to go and take? Noel, I'm going to ask you this first.
I think the one that's got a lot of questions then is whether Braxton Jones is the guy at left tackle, or if there's a, you know, an alt there, Fashanu there, you know, at nine, you know, can you justify passing them if they, if you think they are such an upgrade on Braxton Jones. Now, I think Braxton Jones did well, but, you know, if you have that better option, then, like, Braxton Jones, we know how often linemen get injured. He could be a really good swing tackle there, and he would still get plenty of snaps over the season because players do get injured and things do move around. So, I mean, if you're taking away everything else on me out there, you know, I think probably you kind of see who's available at that stage. If one of those top guys are there, then I think you have a decision to make. You could also look at the interior, the guards. I know Nate Davis got his big money contract, but I don't know if he was overly impressive. Like, I don't see them changing him out. I think you've given him enough money, he'll probably get another season. His season was broke up last year with personal issues and injuries. Tevin Jenkins hopefully can stay fit and solidify himself, but it'll be interesting to see what way they see him going forward. So that could be something to watch out for. But I think if you're looking at it as a whole, then with certain positions that we're not going to mention, then I think you probably see what tackles are available and if maybe they are someone who could upgrade your line enough that you say, you know what, I can't skip them because we're either going to have Justin Fields there who will need to be protected, or we're going to have a rookie quarterback there who will really need to be protected.
Tony, just on that, before you go any further, you want Caleb Williams as your quarterback, and I understand the justification for it. It's a very fair argument to what it is. Neither saying neither there. Who would you want as your left tackle? And I'm dead serious. Would you want a potential long-term left tackle in the likes of Alter Fashion? And I appreciate you haven't gone deep dive into the draft. So let's just imagine that they are pretty good. Who would be like, let's say, what Darnell Wright was last year? Or would you like year three of Braxton Jones at left tackle for Caleb Williams?
Yeah, I mean, this is the question because, you know, do you want a rookie protecting a rookie? You know, they're learning on the job as well. The speed of the game is much different. You know, the caliber of defensive pass rusher that you're coming up against is very, very different as well. So there's a lot to take into consideration there. I mean, I've always been a big backer of Braxton Jones. I think technically he has all the gifts to be a really, really good left tackle. I think, you know, that he's still developing. There was a few concerns over the kind of building strength and all that sort of thing. So for me, you know, if you're talking about taking one at nine, I'd probably, after taking Caleb Williams at one, I'm probably going to go and take the wide receiver, if there's one there.
Yeah.
One of the top three guys I'd be happy with. You know, like, I don't, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. would be great, but realistically, the Bears are probably not going to get him based on either trading down sufficiently enough to get this haul that people keep talking about. You're going to have to go back more than one space, guys, or more than two spaces to get a haul.
You don't know.
No, they will. but it doesn't matter because they'll be gone by the time he gets to nine anyway. So, you know, you're looking at one of the other wide receivers. I think that's hugely important. I think in terms of the tools that Caleb Williams will have available to him, you know, you've got DJ Moore, who's a, you know, out and out wide receiver one in any team in the league. And Cole Kmet has come on leaps and bounds. He's probably the most improved Chicago Bears player on the offensive side of the ball over the last couple of years. And he's turned into a really top quality tight end in the league. And I think if you manage to sort your offensive line out a little bit, especially in the interior, and though you mentioned that with guards, I think taking a guard in the draft at some point is probably a good idea if you can get one high, for two reasons. Firstly, Tevin Jenkins, great player when he's available. However, he's not always available. That injury, consistent nagging injuries and things like that are an issue. And that's absolutely going to play into the decision whether or not.
And sorry, Tony, Nate Davis is similar. Even before he came to the Bears,
Nate Davis is the same, you know, and there's a few things going on there. So there's a lot of concerns. But I think one of the big parts of that though is having that center to anchor everybody. And for me personally, I know there's a lot of people talking about centers that are available in draft, but for me, if I'm taking a center, I'm taking a veteran. I would rather have a veteran center because of how important that position is in recognizing plays and the relationship with the quarterback, and especially if you have a rookie QB in there as well. Yeah. I would rather have a guy who's been doing it for a while. So I would absolutely look to free agency for a center. And I think there might be a couple of different options there coming up if they, if they're not re-signed or whatever. So if you manage to get a good center in, that can have the knock-on effect to your guards and make them a little better. And again, it goes out the way as well with the sort of tackles. But if you get a repeat performance at right tackle next year, obviously, you know, in terms of getting better, and then your left tackle also gets better, then having that kind of refresh in center could make all the difference. And it'll be interesting to see what the decision is there. But if at nine I have the option, I'm probably taking a wide receiver.
No, on that, right? This draft for me is going to be really interesting, obviously, because Bears have two picks in the top 10. And there is going to be someone that's going to fall out of that top 10, and we go into draft stuff like that. I have a real big fear, and this is being completely honest. I have a real big fear that there'll be three quarterbacks taken in the first nine, and there'll be three wide receivers taken before the Bears get to pick at nine again. That's just my own personal takeout. If you were Ryan Poles, and that's, let's say, a worry, and let's say you've already decided you're taking a quarterback at one, whether it's whoever that may be, or Tony screaming in your ear, it's going to only be Caleb Williams, and there's somebody else screaming in your ear about Jalen Daniels, because that will be me at some stage soon. Then there will be a scenario where we get to that point, and you're going, okay, cool, we get to nine. So do you look at it in free agency, and you turn around yourself and go, okay, we're going to take someone like a Higgins, or we're going to take somebody else at free agency. We might have to overpay them, but at least that gives me a guarantee of a wide receiver too. Or do you go, do you know what? I'm going to take a little bit of risk here, hold back that money, put it somewhere else in the team, edge, center, as Tony rightly said, somewhere else in that team, and then hope that one of those three top wide receivers is still there at nine. What would be your strategy if going into that?
Yeah, do you know what, Ant? That's a good question, because, like, obviously there are, you know, we don't know if they'll end up hitting free agency, but there are a couple of wide receivers at the moment who are scheduled to hit free agency who, if they do, like, they are appealing players to get in, but they're going to cost you. And I don't know if you have to then question if you're willing to pay, given age. You know, age will factor in on that. I think Williams at Tampa Bay is up there, but sure, he's 31. Do you want to be giving him 20 plus million to come over? I'm not sure what age Higgins is, but still, he's going to look for a lot of money, and he's got to be in his late 20s at this stage. So that will factor in, and it's not something I think Ryan Poles will do, and I don't think I would either. I would make that move for a wide receiver if I was a wide receiver away from challenging. We're not a wide receiver away from challenging, so I don't think I'd be putting that kind of money into an older player. You know, I think I would look more toward the draft. I know I mentioned tackle there earlier on, but obviously, you know, I'd be looking high for a wide receiver. If it's not the nine pick, it'll be probably, yeah, I mean, I'm sure the Bears will move up into the second at some point. Ryan Poles does like to move and make trades. I think they probably will end up in the second. And this is actually a good draft for wide receivers. So I think I'd probably be looking to get a receiver in the draft than I would paying big, big money to someone who's probably on the higher ages of 20, you know, near the 30s there. I just think, I don't think the Bears are at that spot yet. Maybe in a year or two, if we keep developing and we find ourselves kind of, you know, maybe we are that wide receiver away from, you know, making that push, I would do it. But no, for me, I'd look for a wide receiver.
It's what makes the draft really interesting. It makes the whole process really interesting though, Tony, doesn't it? In the sense of that you're going into it going, yeah, and I agree with Noel's point. Makes total valid sense. There's no point giving someone like a Mike Evans 20-odd million when... I think he's out as well, but let's say you're no point giving him that at that age. He'll want it for 3 years. There's no point giving him that. But then you're going on draft day, you've got your one done, it's finished. You're sitting there at nine. You haven't got a second to almost use to try and divvy up again. And you're hoping you're in trouble if the wide receivers come. What would you do in that situation, looking at that process? Same question as I asked and all.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about guys that are like in their, you know, 29, 30, 31. You know, there's a scenario there where you can offer guys one-year deals. Now, I know you tend to see that more with teams that are sort of contending. But you just don't know. Like, it depends what sort of deal you can get. You've got a lot of money to play with. I think there'll be a lot more money to play with as well after we make some cuts. You know, I think Whitehead will be gone. I think Eddie Jackson will be gone. So, gives you a wee bit more flexibility there. But Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, see if you can fill your needs in free agency. You do it. And, you know, and that's not necessarily just taking players for the sake of it. You know, if you can fill your needs, but you're taking good players, good quality players, then you do it. Now, in terms of the players that are available in free agency, they tend not to be guys that are not always kind of hugely sought after. There's maybe only five guys every free agency that have maybe had to leave for some reason or another, where they can't afford them or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So if you can go in and you can get those guys at positions that you need, you do it. And it means that you can then go into the draft and just take the best player that you can get at each position as you go along. I've always been a guy that would say take the best player available every time. However, that does have a caveat depending on whether or not there's a position that you really need and you have a huge opportunity like the Bears have right now. Although at the same time, you know, a lot of guys have got Caleb Williams as their best player in the draft instead of MHJ, so you can do with that what you will. But if you can do what you need to do in free agency and then just take the best players in the draft, do that. I'm not a big fan of drafting for need solely. Yep. You know, I just don't see the point in just taking a guy for the sake of it. You've got to bring in quality, not quantity. And if you can get proper quality, I'd rather you make that move. If you can't get quality, don't make the move. Trade back at that point and pick someone up later on or whatever you need to do.
That's a nice segue into my last little bit that we're going to do for the last couple of minutes and get involved in this. There's still football going on, annoyingly.
Yeah.
There is still football going on. And last weekend, we had some really interesting games. And because you mentioned it there about kind of doing smart things, and you got to give credit to Detroit Lions. First of all, a lot of their fans have had a lot of hassle to go through and a lot of heartache over years. So in that sense, kind of like happy for them in that sense. Now, I don't want them to go win it now. Don't go too far. But they're a team who have definitely had the attitude of, we're going into the draft, we're going to be picking for the best player available, as they've done. And we all laughed at them last year with the likes of Gibbs. And Gibbs was simply sensational last week. He really was. And their big moment where there was a Bucs got back into the game and he almost killed them off with a 50-odd yard run down the field to get a touchdown to push them back out ahead. Just on each individual game, and I won't give it to both of you because otherwise we'll be here all day, but Noel, I'll give you the Lions one first. So the Lions and the Bucs, one, did you get a chance to watch it? And two, what was your takeaway from that game?
Yeah, I did. I seen most of it now. Look, the Lions are just a good team. They've got good coaches. They've got good players, but that's come over time. Like, you look at that offensive line from the Lions, there's a lot of high first round draft picks in there because they built over the years and kind of finally it's kind of come to fruition for them. But they're just a better team. I don't think the Bucs are a very good team at all. And you know, you've got Baker Mayfield, the quarterback, has done okay this year, but I don't think he's the right quality you need when you hit those playoffs. And the Lions just look top to bottom a good team. As you say, the draft picks are hitting for them. There was a couple of draft picks they took. People questioned where they took them, and you know, those guys are contributing and they're doing well. Jared Goff isn't a great quarterback, but he is a good quarterback when you know the right system to use him in, and when you use him correctly, and when you can protect him. Then look, they have the right Saint Brown brother over there. We got the wrong one, unfortunately. And a couple of other good young players there. So they are a good young team who are well coached, and they are an exciting team to watch, unfortunately. And, you know, it just is what it is. And I think, we seen it last year, the second half of the season, when things clicked for them and they got in that rhythm. Like, we knew coming into this season they were going to be the number one team in the NFC North, which it turned out to be. So they're a team that we're going to have to keep an eye on. They're going to be a team we're going to have to peg back. You know, what can you do? You know, hopefully that will just make the Bears strive to be better.
And we nearly bet them twice. That's the annoying part about it.
Well, they got away. They got away from.
We got away in Detroit, and it was probably our best performance of the season against them at home, arguably. In every facet of the football game, we really dominated that day. We made Jared Goff look what I believe he is, which is a questionable quarterback. But when he's got the ability that he has and the confidence that he has, and that's another example. He's been sensational.
He's like a lot of quarterbacks. When you use them correctly, you put them in a position to win, and you put the right players around them, then they can do what they need to do. Experience for Jared Goff is probably the biggest trait he has. He has that experience. He's been to a Super Bowl before. You know, he's the kind of a player that if you treat him right and you put the right pieces around, he shows what you can do with a quarterback if you get everything else right and you have competent play calling.
And the city loves him. The city absolutely loves him. And if they're all got his back, it's pretty cool. The first game I'm going to go to, Tony, the first one, Ravens against Texans. Everyone's all talking about Lamar and CJ Stroud struggles because, look, he's a rookie. Come on now. No bashing on CJ Stroud at all. Sensational season. But he was going up against some defense. Like that Ravens defense for me, when the game was on the line, I think it was in the second quarter, there was a bit of a Lamar kind of went in a three and out, I think two in a row. That defense stood up. How good is this Ravens defense, Tony? And what did you think of the game overall?
Yeah, to be honest, when I was going into the game, you know how I love an underdog. So I absolutely wanted to see the Texans continue this sort of renaissance. And, you know, they've had a great season under their new rookie QB and rookie head coach. And I think the whole team really collectively have done very, very well. Clearly, this is for this year anyway, as far as they were going to go. They were just outplayed in every sort of facet of the game. But you're right that, you know, they managed to hold that team at 10 points. The Ravens held them at 10 points, which hasn't been easy for a lot of teams this season to kind of keep them at bay. So that's a huge part. You know, we always talk about how important the defense is. It's hugely important. If you can stop your other team from scoring points, then, you know, you're giving yourself a better chance to win. And I think, you know, we've seen it before with the Ravens the last time they went to the Super Bowl and won back in 2012, or 2013, whatever it was. You know, the defense was something else back then as well. And they had Joe Flacco at quarterback, you know, who, you know, was Lamar Jackson's obviously a
better player than Joe Flacco.
But Joe Flacco did it, but the defense got them there, you know. And that was a big thing, you know, for the Bears back in 2018. Our defense was that good that, you know, you thought you could overcome the limitations of Mitch Trubisky and get places. But the difference is when you've got a really good defense and you've got a quarterback who's probably going to be MVP, you know, it's a really great combination and it stands them in really good ground moving forward. But yeah, it was fine. It was a lot less of a competitive game than I thought it was going to be honest with you. But a really good learning opportunity for the Texans moving forward.
Yeah, and I know, what a season by the Texans. D'Amico Ryans is my coach of the year. I don't care what any other coach does. To take a team that was one play away from the first pick, you know, with a rookie quarterback, and to do what they did, like, and to get through their first playoff game and win, to go to the Ravens, and there's no shame in going to the Ravens and getting that result. Like, what a season they've had.
And also to take the risk he took in the draft last year by not just taking CJ Stroud, but going, giving away a shed load of picks for what looks like an absolute baller in Anderson at edge. And that is a risky move, because if that goes wrong, that's him out of a job. There's not even a question mark on it. So you got to give him credit for that. I'm going to take the 49ers against the Green Bay Packers. See, I called them the Green Bay Packers for the first time all season because it was brilliant. In saying all that, this isn't a shot you, Tony. This is just a comment. Aaron Jones at running back was that whole Green Bay offense. I know I was on with Jordan Love. He dragged that team for the last couple of weeks of the season into the playoffs. And it shows when you get that running back on a roll like that, and you have an offensive line that the Green Bay Packers have, it started to create opportunities. And it made Jordan Love look good, in my opinion. Now, Jordan Love, don't get me wrong, Jordan Love has had a fantastic season. He's totally gone way beyond what I thought he was going to do. But, and everyone's laughing at the last play, the interception, because it was a terrible pass. It was a terrible way to finish a season if you're a Green Bay fan. Hilariously funny if you're a Bears fan, but it was a bad way to do it. But I would have loved, just Jordan Love's season has been pretty damn good overall. But for me, what has been open and honest, and what I left that game with in my brain, is that Matt LaFleur is a really, really, really good head coach, and we don't have one of them. And it's just, when it comes down to it, he is 10-0 against the Bears for a reason. It's not all to do with Karen. It's not all to do with that. He is 10-0 against us for a reason. This was meant to be the Green Bay Packers down year, and Matt LaFleur had a quarterback meltdown moment away from playing in a championship game, away to Detroit, where they have already beaten them And I'm telling you now, Detroit Lions would not have wanted to play the Green Bay Packers. It just, that stuck in my head. Also stuck in my head is, I thought the San Francisco 49ers were going to maul them, and they didn't. And that comes down to Purdy. I thought Purdy was very poor. I thought he looked nervous. He didn't know what to do with a wet football. And they McCaffrey got them over the line. And it's interesting, the elite running backs, and there's not many of them, the elite running backs are getting people over the line, whether that's Lamar Jackson with his feet in the Ravens and sometimes, whether that's McCaffrey. And I just thought the 49ers fell into the conference game. I'll leave the two of you lads with the best game of the weekend, right? So I'll let either one of you start. Bills Chiefs, right? One thing I will say before you start, I was desperate for the Bills to win this game. I was just desperate, but it didn't happen. Tony, Noel, whichever one of you guys want to go first on Bills Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is two things. The Chiefs continue to find a way to win games. You know, and they haven't been, I mean, we talk about Patrick Mahomes not being great this year. Actually, his stats are still very, very good. And if we were, you know, as a Bears, for Bears quarterback, we'd absolutely take it every year and laugh about it. You know what I mean? Because he's been very, very good. He's not been up to the same usual standards for various reasons, including the supporting cast that he's got, but he still managed to do a lot. They continue to find a way. The Bills continue to find a way to not be able to use Josh Allen to the best of his ability. I believe Josh Allen is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And they just, I feel like he's been wasted there to a certain degree. But yeah, great game. Something tells me the Chiefs, though, there's just something about them that says that they're going to get to the Super Bowl again. You know, and it's just that Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes combination that they just seem to outsmart people. And that class and ability just drags them over the line every time.
Do you know what reminds me of? Sorry, man. Sorry, interrupt you, Grant.
No, on you go.
It's like, do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Manchester United in the noughties. Do you know when Ferguson had like nobody? They were all injured. And somehow they won. They won the league with the likes of, I'm sorry for anyone that's not into soccer, Darren Fletcher and John O'Shea in centre midfield and stuff like that.
David May.
There's a David May and all these lads. They have a bang of Manchester United in the noughties, and Karen would love that one about them. I interrupt you, Tony. My apologies. Just my brain worked in a quick way.
Yeah, no, that was really it. You know, and you know, they had the good running game as well. They you learn, and the experience that teams like that have that have been to the big game so many times is that you learn. You're smart in your approach to things. And you manage to sort of drag yourself over the line. We always say the best teams find a way to win, and the Chiefs found a way to win, despite the fact that Matt Nagy is on that offensive staff. They found a way to win. So fair play to them. Fair play to them. Who is it?
I get to their championship game now in a minute.
Yeah.
Noel, do you want to add on the Bills Chiefs?
No, just a lot of what Tony said there. Look, the Chiefs find ways to win, and the Bills, when it counts, find ways to lose. And that's, you know, that seems to be the way it boils down. But look, when you have Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, like, that's one of those, that'll go down as one of those head coach quarterback tandems, you know, like Belichick and Brady. And it'll just go down as one of those in history, because they just, when you have those two guys, you have a chance to win, and they've proved it. And as mentioned, even with Matt Nagy there, they're despite their limitations with him, they're proving it anyway. So they just do, and I wouldn't be surprised if they go to the Super Bowl, and on the biggest stage with the experience they have. Again, you wouldn't be surprised if they won it. Now, I think the Ravens will probably beat them, but still, it wouldn't be a shock if it goes the other way, even though they don't look like they have the players they have previously had. As I say, with those two guys, they always have a chance.
Kieran's obviously got a burner account called Yardbox 77 if he's thrown in no Darren Fletcher slander, so he's obviously watching from home. So we get into the last two. Who's going to the Super Bowl, lads? Noel, who's going to win between the 49ers and the Lions, and who's going to win between the Ravens and the Chiefs?
I think the Ravens, that one is actually a coin toss for me, but I think the Ravens will win. I'll just think that defense is really strong. Lamar is, you know, he's pushing for an MVP. I think they might just be a little bit too strong for the Chiefs. Although, as you say, never rule the Chiefs out with the two guys they have there and when Kelsey's on form. But I think the Ravens probably do it. And I'm hoping the 49ers have a better showing last week or this week than they did last week against an NFC North team. Because while I'm impressed with what the Lions have done and fair play to them, like, I don't want to see them in the Super Bowl. You know, I would just rather the 49ers got there. So I'll say 49ers, Ravens.
Tony?
So for me, I'm actually thinking that the Kansas City Chiefs are going to beat the Ravens. I'm banking on Patrick Mahomes. He's the better quarterback. He's the best quarterback in the league. And quarterback makes the difference. And this has nothing to do with my argument for taking it. It is. But still, so for me, I think Kansas City will find a way to win again. They'll regroup and they'll head to the big game. In terms of the Detroit 49ers game, it's sort of more difficult to call for me, to be honest with you. It really depends on how the 49ers kind of approach this game. That's probably going to be it, to be honest with you. But, I mean, take rivalries aside, what a story it would be for the Detroit Lions to get the Super Bowl. Like, through how many years when they've not been able to even hit the playoffs, never mind the Super Bowl. Like, that would be something else. I don't like the Lions. There's a part of me is kind of like curious to see it, because I think that would be a kick in the arse that the Bears need to sort of start making changes. Like the fact that the Packers have been successful more recently than the Bears. You know, we're talking about the Packers. Someone was talking about it on Twitter last week. Their down seasons are when they win 8 or 9 games. Our down seasons are when we win 2. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's levels to this.
And celebrate them getting knocked out. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. You know, all the honestly, Christ.
I knew. I said that to you just to see your reaction. I said that to see your reaction. Again. Can I say something about the Lions on that one, right? There was someone, I can't remember what podcast I listened to it, and they were saying about that they looked at it, might have been CHGO, and they were looking at the morning of the games, and each of the other games, you could buy a ticket last minute for like $115, $105, and $73. In Detroit, the last ticket you get was $463, right? That's how much that city is bought into that whole thing. For me, It's sensational in a weird way, and it's right. It's a kick up the hole Bears need. We've all been looking at Green Bay, but these guys have snuck up. These guys have come up, and they are going to be a problem for quite some time because they're not old. They're not old, and they haven't got money issues. For me, they're
a very young team.
For me, 49ers against Lions. I think the 49ers are going to bottle it. I really do. I think they're going to absolutely bottle it because I think their quarterback is terrified. Out there, he was terrified last week, and I think he'll be terrified this weekend because of what happened last year. And I think if the Lions can keep, and I think I read somewhere that if they keep it to McCaffrey to under 55 yards or something, there's a 80% chance they win or something stupid like that. I think that's their whole game plan. I think they will go do that, and I actually think the Lions will go there and sneak into the Super Bowl. But I wouldn't worry now because it doesn't matter. Because whoever wins the game on the other side of the draw will win the Super Bowl. Because for me, Ravens against Chiefs should be the Super Bowl. It's the two best quarterbacks. It's the two best teams, in my opinion. And for the exact opposite reason that Tony said it, I am desperate for Lamar Jackson to win a Super Bowl. Just to show people that you don't have to throw the ball 4 billion yards. You can run the football if you want to. There's many different ways to win a game of football. And in my opinion, it would be a sensational one for Lamar Jackson to win it. It would be a great one for the Ravens, even though I famously 2 years ago called them a dumpster fire of a franchise. And I remember getting absolutely pillared for that. It was to do with their physios, not anything else. And I just think that's going to be the game of all games. I think that. I hope it is, actually. I hope it's like the Bills-Chiefs game. I hope it goes right down to the wire. I hope it's not a kicker that costs them, but I hope it gets to that point. And me personally, I think it's going to be the Ravens getting through. But in saying that, wouldn't surprise me if it's the Chiefs, because you just don't bet against Mahomes. You just don't. It's going to be a fantastic weekend. You're going to have Ravens, hopefully, from my side, Ravens against Lions. Noel, you went with Ravens against 49ers. And Tony, 49ers, you went with Chiefs against, did you say 49ers?
Or actually, who did you say, Tony, in that game? Yeah.
You didn't say Lions or 49ers. Which one did you went to go with?
Lions. Lions will win. Derek, just to call you on your shite, pal. I didn't say Allen was the best in the league. I said he was one of the best in the league, but Mahomes is the best. So,
Derek, exactly at Cork. Exactly, Derek.
Well, I would say, though, your point about Lamar Jackson, though, is he still threw for 3,700 yards this season?
He didn't last week, though. He didn't last week.
You're right. There's more than one way to win a game, but you have to be dual threat. You know, you can't just
be run the big game. He ran the football. We're going to have this conversation with three more. It's going to get unbelievably, Tony's going to call to my house in Sweden. I'm going to call to his house in Glasgow. We're going to have conversations straight across the board. And Noel's going to be the one that has to kind of mediate and laugh in the background at two of us. Look, it's been brilliant. Thanks to everyone who got in the chat. Even those who were saying stupid things, great things, brilliant things, always come over to the Irish Bear Show, always get involved. We put your stuff up, whether we agree with you or, as Tony says, you're talking shite, or whatever it is. So make sure you come over, subscribe to it, follow us. I'm sick and tired of listening to everybody else talking about other podcasts that are there. We are the best podcast. We are the people that you're going to be around. Keep listening to us, keep involved. We're going to be there right through to the draft. And the best part of us, we all don't agree. That's the best part of this whole thing. We all can have different opinions, different conversations, but we're all still there. Now, the fun part, am I going to be the one that has to send the brand stuff off and hit the end of the show, or can somebody else do it for me?
I'll do it. Don't you worry.
Brilliant. This is what teamwork's all about. Enjoy the games of the weekend. Thank God the Packers aren't there. Enjoy the games of the weekend. Enjoy everyone getting involved with us. Thank you so much for getting involved. And as always, don't forget, bear down.
Bear down. Bear down.